Aloha, this is Catherine Cruz. Thanks for joining us here on The Conversation, Hawaii Talks. It's Thursday, July 25th. Today we talk sensitivity training. We highlight efforts by police departments to better understand our growing community of Pacific Islanders from the area of Micronesia. We check in on a community meeting to get feedback about Army leases that are expiring here on Oahu in 2029. And a West Oahu nonprofit celebrates 30 years of helping with the educational needs of Native Hawaiian children and Waianae Coast residents. Plus, what's said to be the most beautiful ship in the world sailed into Honolulu Harbor this week. It's the second visit to the islands for the Italian Navy upon this really, really tall historic vessel, and the public is invited on board for an open house. You're tuned to The Conversation here on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. For the first time, Hawaii County police officers are being offered cultural training to better understand the growing Micronesian community. Here to talk about that is HPR reporter Cassie Ordonio. Good morning.
Good morning, Catherine.
Yeah, you know, I'm familiar with the Marshallese community. You know, a number of them work picking coffee there on the Kona side. What other groups are there?
So the Marshallese community that you mentioned is mostly on the west side of Hawaii Island. On the east side, we're seeing more Micronesians from the Federated States of Micronesia. So you're seeing Chukis, Pohnpeian, and actually they have a pretty large Yapis community over there and some Palauans. Those are most of the groups that kind of make up the population of Hawaii Island.
Interesting. So, yeah, tell us more about this training that the officers are getting.
So this is the first ever training that was conducted, I believe, earlier this month. And it was a one-day training, and it was held, one training was held on the west side of Hawaii Island, and the other one went as was on the east side of Hawaii Island. It was a four-hour training, so half day, but it was conducted by the Hawaii Island Community Health Center in partnership with the Hawaii Island Police Department and also with local Micronesian leaders and other nonprofit groups to develop this program. So the police officers, I think about 40 of them, attended this training for the first time. They got to have introductions into the community and introducing themselves and their intentions of why they're here and why they want to learn. They also get a brief description and history of the Compacts of Free Association and why Micronesians are here in Hawaii. And they also get to learn about debunking myths and misperceptions and really tackling these stereotypes or preconceived notions that some of the officers may have on the Micronesian community. And the last part of the segment of the training is also they got to talk about future collaborations with each other to better mend the relationship between the Micronesian communities and the police departments.
Yeah, I mean, this is a really positive thing because it can really diffuse tensions.
Yeah, and Captain Roy Valera of the Hawaii Island Police Department said the training also allowed officers to have an open dialogue between themselves and the panel and the Micronesian community.
Some of the things that I know some of the officers had was preconceived notions or normative beliefs about Micronesian culture. And sometimes the thing with normative beliefs is they're not necessarily based on fact. And it's sometimes just assumptions that people have made or concepts that aren't really understood. And I think what was beneficial was that there was dialogue not only between her panel, but with the panel and officers. And we were able to ask questions about things that we heard or things that we didn't understand. And we were able to have this discussion in a large group setting. And I think the officers left with a better understanding with some of the questions that they had.
Yeah, and so they're talking, the Hawaii Island Police Department and the nonprofit groups and the Micronesian communities, they have been more in discussion about having the statewide initiative, but that's still kind of underway because that's going to involve either funding from the county or the state to make it statewide. But right now it's kind of more on the grassroots or ground efforts or county efforts of really having these trainings. When I was talking to Leandoi Lani Healy of the Hawaii Island Community Health Center, she was talking to Captain Roy Valera about possibly having it on this training on a quarterly basis or even just on an annual basis, because with other jobs, the police departments may have incoming officers who may be new to the community, or they might be hiring from the mainland who has no cultural landscape of Hawaii.
Yeah, so basically, you've got new cadets, new people coming and going, and it would be good to, you know, include them in the training. Because this training isn't mandatory, right? This is voluntary.
It's voluntary, and only about, I think, more than 40 officers attended, which is a start. And the panel that attended and created this program, it was all voluntary. It was just something that they wanted to do to kind of get a head start and just to train the officers and mend that relationship or any tension that was there between the Micronesian community and the police department. And but there was more people involved. They were very strategic, both Captain Valera and Leanne Noilani Healy, on, you know, who are they going to invite to the table, especially like bringing in more Micronesian voices and cultural experts. And so Leanne gave a list of folks who were involved in this training.
We had representation from Taupe Day. She's the Hawaii County Immigration Specialist working for the county, but she's also from Kauai and serves on the east side of the island with this nonprofit group called MUBI, who has a long history of being available and being supportive of many people from Micronesia. A group on the west side of the island is called the Big Island Marshallese Community Association. So just having shared these two groups, for example, with HPD leadership that attended training as well as officers, that was a step in the right direction in formalizing a process of ho'olauna, making introductions between leaders.
Yeah, and building trust.
And this type of training on Hawaii Island, it isn't new to the state. We are Oceania, the nonprofit here on Oahu. They actually conducted a similar type of training for the Honolulu Police Department, and it was shortly after the fatal shooting of I Remember PsyCap in 2021. And when that happened, there was a lot of mourning in the Micronesian community, and it was very overwhelming for some of them, at least according to Josie Howard of We Are Oceania. And so for her, she was telling me, instead of going out there and protesting the fatal shooting of this teenage boy, she wanted to kind of get more to the core issue of breaking these barriers between the police department or the Honolulu Police Department and the Micronesian youth and the community as a whole. And Josie Howard, she worked with, at the time, it was Interim Rad Vanek. I hope I pronounced his first name right.
Yes, the chief.
Yeah, he was the former interim chief, and she worked with a couple other officers who she says are now retired. But before they retired, they were able to come together, and Josie Howard said she had them, the police department, connected with Micronesian community leaders. She had them connected also to the grassroots organizations here on Oahu and even the church groups, because a lot of Micronesians, depending on either are Christian or Catholic. So that was one of the positive steps that Josie Howard said, that was kind of mending that relationship. But Josie also talked about, you know, how different the culture is between how Micronesians interact with the police back home and also on Hawaii Island, or here in Hawaii.
Here, a lot of the police are strangers to us, just like we are strangers to them. And this is why, like, that key of building relationship is so important. And that's part of my thinking of back home, you know, like we all know each other, so it's a little bit easier. But here, when it comes to language barrier and you don't know the person and you don't understand the nuances, it really adds to your disorientationness and your fear, your intimidation. So sometimes it leads to like not understanding fully what's going on, not being able to ask the right questions or answer the questions, or sometimes people just don't want to say anything because they don't want to get into trouble because they don't know what to say. Or sometimes they just totally give in because of the respecting. You know what? Yeah, I did this. Yeah, like, or also there's this new feeling of, especially with our youth, they're so, I think, traumatized with the experience, their experiences with the police and the experiences of their peers with the police, that they look at the police as their enemy or as someone who's out to get them, who's not safe for them. Which is, to me, that is the worst thing you want to think of. So that effort of trying to bring the two together, to build the relationship so that we can rebuild the trust that the police are really out there to protect our community, but not to hurt our community.
Yeah, it's something that we have to really address. So it's terrific that they're offering this training.
Yeah, and Josie hopes that, you know, more Micronesian youth could either get involved into either becoming police officers to mend that relationship.
Yeah, that would be something. But thank you so much, Cassie.
Thanks for having me.
We have been talking to HBR's Cassie Ordonio. She's been looking into new training that's being offered to police officers to learn about the cultures of our newest immigrant group. They are the peoples from the tiny island groups in the area of Micronesia who all have different cultures and languages.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Zippy's Restaurants, offering dishes such as chili in bulk bags and pouches, ready for the family to heat and eat, or to freeze for later. Online ordering at zippys.com or by downloading the app.
Venezuelans are heading to the polls on Sunday to elect a new president. With social inequality on the rise, voters are motivated. The Get Out the Vote message is being spread at lots of places, including buses. More about the issues on the ballot in Venezuela next time on The World.
Beginning this afternoon at 1.
Support for HPR comes from the Honolulu Museum of Art. On view now, Fashioning Aloha traces Hawaii's global impact on fashion and the inspirations behind the designs. HonoluluMuseum.org.
For the past 60 years, the U.S. Army has been leasing land on Oahu for military training for just $1 a year. The leases at Makua Valley, Kahuku, and Poamoho are set to expire in 2029. The renewal in terms of a new lease covering more than 6,000 acres of state land have been the subject of community meetings this month. Public feedback has been mostly negative. The conversation's summer intern, Alicia Salcido, got the chance to talk with Heilani Sonoda Pale, a Native Hawaiian activist who maintains that the state leases should not be renewed.
Hundreds of people have come out over the past three nights, and the overwhelming message they were sending every single night, with the exception of one or two, was literally telling the Army to clean up and get out, that they want the leases to expire. No action should be taken, and that the leases should expire in 2029. And I think that's been the big message these past three nights. There's also been a lot of education going on both ways. So I've been learning sitting in these hearings for three nights about these communities and what they've had to deal with, having the military occupying prime forest lands and prime lands that are right in the smack middle of their community. It's been eye-opening to hear all of these testimonies about living literally next to a training area where they're bombing and shooting and doing all these military training exercises. And that's what's really different about these three facilities that's up for expiration in 2029 is that they're in communities. They're in the middle of communities. So we've been hearing a lot these past three nights about what's the experiences of Hawaiians mostly and residents from these different communities and how much of a struggle it's been having the military smack in the middle of their community. It's been a great time to organize as well for the grassroots Aloha Aina people who are in the movement. And I think from these three nights, what we can take from them is that our people are ready to move forward. And I think they're done. And that's been the message. They're done with the U.S. Army, they're done with the U.S. military, and they're done with the illegal occupation of America and Hawaii.
Yeah, there's definitely been, like, a lot of talk surrounding, like, you know, the legal, I guess, functionalities of, like, what has happened and how that's, like, you know, violating current laws. And there's also, like, the culture aspect of it, the environmental aspect of it, as well as just the relationships that have in these communities. And I think, you know, that's really powerful to witness.
Yeah, no, and it's been empowering, I think, for all of us to be in that space where people are sharing all of this information. And it's not just the information, but it's the harm and trauma of all of this going on. And that's what you hear, too. You hear the pain, the eha. You hear experiences that no one ever talked about before. I mean, it started with Waianae, with removing people from Makua Valley at gunpoint. Then we heard from Kahuku about bikers going up into the mountain and seeing unexploded ordnances, seeing bombs in the forest. And then here, you know, it's a constant noise that's going on around them. The residents here are literally having to listen and hear the bombing and all of the activity going on in the base near them or in their community. So I think it's been educational, it's been reaffirming, and it's also heartening. Because what it's telling us these past 3 nights, and listening to everyone testify, is that everyone's in the same page. And I think as someone who wants the leases to end in 2029, that just gives me a lot more hope for the future. Because a future in Hawaii that is livable, that is worth passing on to our children and grandchildren, does not include the military. And the military has done the most damage to our land, water, sacred sites, cultural practices, and to our people in general. I mean, starting with the overthrow. So, and we've heard that story over and over.
For those that are not necessarily Native Hawaiian, but are still residents of Hawaii, why should they care about these land leases?
Well, I think anybody who wants to raise their children here and put roots down here in Hawaii, and who have roots here in Hawaii, whether you're Kanaka or not, you should be concerned about the military presence, especially if it's in your community, because what Red Hill has taught us is that they're not transparent, they're not forthcoming with information, and, you know, they poisoned 93,000 people and no one went to prison or no one was held accountable for that. So we really have to rethink. And plus, too, I mean, with global warming, climate change, and the rising seas, disappearing islands, the military is right in there. They are the biggest producer of greenhouse gases in the world and the biggest polluter. So they are the cause and the driving force behind climate change. We are on the front lines of climate change as an island in the middle of the Pacific. Our brothers and sisters in Oceania are losing their shorelines. We are losing our shorelines. Houses are falling into the ocean. So it's a bigger problem, you know. It's not just one community's problem, or it's not just these three communities' problem. It's our island problem. It's Hawaii's problem. It's Oceania's problem, right? We need to start looking at a future without the military, or the military needs to change their mission, you know, make it one of humanitarian aid.
That was Heolani Sonoda Pale, who opposes the renewal of military land leases on Oahu. We also talked to Army Colonel Stephen McGunnell, the former commander of U.S. Army Garrison Hawaii, about the community pushback.
Land use in Hawaii is always a difficult discussion. The community has very important perspectives. The military has needs to support training. And I've taken away that there's a lot of discussion still to go on, help bridge the gap between understanding what is the military training. We say military training, and we know what that means in our head, but we can do a better job of explaining what that training is to the community. And then also highlighting some options for better cooperation. For instance, the closures of the Kahuku dirt button, the motocross track. So identifying opportunities where we can improve our cooperation on the current environment while listening to community's thoughts about the overall lease extension or renewal process.
If the leases are renewed, what are your goals, especially, you know, with regards to in the environment and cultural stewardship, that I know that issues have been, like, you know, mentioned in regards to?
So the Army Natural Resources Program and the Cultural Resource Program already has fairly extensive efforts that go into not only documenting cultural sites, but working to preserve those, and also provide community access at times when requested. And then the Natural Resources Program has a very extensive both flora and fauna program to help protect endangered species in order to preserve them, and not just within the land, but to look at the ecosystem or environment where those endangered species live on Army installations and also on other lands. So to work in cooperation for conservation to help protect endangered plants and animals that exist not only on the training lands that are leased, but also outside on state lands and even on the private lands.
And then how about the cultural practitioner part?
So in terms of the cultural practitioner part and access, we have a cultural resources program that works very hard to document the sites, maintain records of what they are, and then also cooperate with Native Hawaiian organizations or individuals that come forward and request access to a site for cultural practitioner needs or uses, and sometimes even for school events. So we do with certain organizations run school groups and bring them into Nakua Valley to be able to see some of the sites that are there. So working very hard to support access as much as we can with the personnel that we have inside our program.
And I know that the area of land nearby here is known as Huamoho, right? And then it's marked as state-owned lands on the map that was provided to me on the website. So why is it important to the military, that land specifically?
So Huamoho serves a couple of purposes. There is some very limited training that does take place in there, and that really consists of training helicopter crews to be able to extract injured personnel from heavier tree canopy, jungle-like environments. And that is used for our forces while they're out and deployed, also when they're training, but can also be used if we have a injured hiker on the hillside. The other purpose that Huamoho serves is there's a significant amount of conservation effort that goes on up there between fencing units to keep out feral ungulates that tear up the understory and reduce our ability to recharge our aquifers, and also preservation of plants and animals. There are endangered species that rely on that habitat. So very little on-the-ground training and really more principally used as a conservation unit.
And how do these military leases tie into national security interests elsewhere? Because I know there's a lot of conflicts going on around the world right now that the U.S. is heavily involved in.
We would like less conflicts, but to be prepared in case we do have to respond. So the training lands here are critical to our soldiers to build the necessary skills and abilities as they come in. Maybe it's a first-term soldier, and they come here, and this is their first chance to train and become good at their job. And then what that is important is they are now working with partner countries across the Pacific, partnering in the Philippines most recently, and training on the ground with soldiers from other countries, forming relationships, forming bonds, and then also demonstrating strength in partnership, and that strength is for peace. And that's really what we truly use the land here is for, readiness of our units to make them ready to go out and demonstrate to our other partners in the Pacific a skilled military that can work professionally alongside them. And that partnership can then help them be a stable and peaceful country.
Sort of like similar to what RIMPAC's doing this summer, right?
Yes, yeah, partnership. And that's one of the reasons the strategic importance of Hawaii is it has always been a crossroads in the Pacific, and it allows countries to come together in peace, in partnership, to build strength. That the goal is then to perpetuate peace so that there isn't conflict in the Pacific.
That was Colonel Stephen Gungle talking to HPR's intern, Alyssa Salcido, about the Army land leases on Oahu, which are set to expire in 2029. The community hearings on the lease renewal took place earlier this month, but the public does have until August 7th to submit comments on the U.S. Army website. Look for links on our website later today.
On the next Fresh Air, as the war between Israel and Hamas continues, the conflict between Israel and Hezbollah is escalating. We'll talk with Dexter Filkins of The New Yorker about his reporting trip to an area of Lebanon controlled by Hezbollah fighters, meeting with a Hezbollah commander, and why this conflict could draw in Iran and the U.S. Join us.
Beginning this afternoon at 3, following On Point.
Aloha, this is Steve Kerwood, host of Living on Earth. Each week we discuss the challenges of climate disruption, but we also look for solutions and ways to cope and thrive. And it brings us special joy to showcase the wonders of nature and the spectacular biodiversity of the planet we call home. So join me tonight at 6:30 here on HPR One.
You're tuned to The Conversation here on statewide member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. Coming up, your backyard quiz. Today, we're testing your knowledge of our state's bodies of water. Our state's longest river is the 28-mile Wailuku River in Hilo on the Big Island. It spans a divide created by lava from Mauna Kea and Mauna Loa and is home to the popular visitor site Rainbow Falls. If you travel to the other side of the island chain, you'll come to the Wailua River on Kauai. It's only half as long as the Wailuku River, but holds a very important distinction. It's the only navigable river in our state. We also have several notable lakes, some in very interesting locations. Lake Waiau sits over 13,000 feet above sea level near the summit of Mauna Kea. And way out in the northwestern Hawaiian Islands is Lake Laysan, a 100-acre hyper-saline saline lake that makes Laysan Island look like a floating Cheerio. As for our state's largest lake, you may be surprised as to where it is. So for today's backyard quiz, can you tell us the name of Hawaii's largest lake and where is it located? Call 808-941-3689 or toll free 877-941-3689 if you know the answer. The first one to get it right scores an HPR reusable tote bag.
Support for the Backyard Quiz comes from Nereid Hawaii, supporting nonprofits such as the Molokai Affordable Housing Alliance, providing kupuna with resources for building affordable homes on Molokai. NereidHawaii.com.
The local nonprofit In Peace is celebrating its 30th anniversary this year. In Peace stands for Institute for Native Pacific Education and Culture. It was started in 1994 by three Kamehameha school educators at a time when KS trustees were shutting down some community outreach efforts and reeling from a corruption scandal. Since then, In Peace has been dedicated to creating pathways for teachers along the Waianae Coast, increasing community-based childcare, and working with local people toward financial well-being. The organization started with addressing needs along the Waianae Coast, but has since expanded to Molokai, the Big Island, and Kauai. The Conversation's Russell Subiono walked down memory lane with In Peace co-founder and board member Kathy Au in our studio.
I'm going to take you back to where we were in 1994. So this is the period when I'm working for Kamehameha Schools, as is my fellow founder, Sherilyn Franklin Gu, and our dear colleague, Alice Kawakami, who had been with us also at Kamehameha Schools. And we are part of the vision that Trustee Pinky Thompson, Matsuo Takabuki, and Hung Mo Ching had for the Kamehameha Schools, which was that it would be reaching out to all Hawaiians, not just those students who qualified for admission to the Kamehameha Schools campus. And then we see the period begin, which is described in the book, Broken Trust. So here we are, we're part of this mission of Kamehameha Schools to reach out to the broader community. And all of a sudden we find ourselves in a situation where the then trustees are closing down all the community outreach efforts. So in the fall of 1994, The community outreach efforts were closed in the spring of 95, but in the fall of 94, it was already very evident that everything we had worked for, I was at Kamehameha Schools for 23 years, everything we had worked for was about to end. And the needs in the community were greater than ever. So what could we do? We were just three individuals trying to look at a situation where the largest charitable organization in our state is pulling resources out of Native Hawaiian communities. We're not able to sit around and do nothing. So we thought it was more of a gesture. We didn't know that we would be around for 30 years. So we went to one of our colleagues. He had been an anthropologist at KEEP. His name is John D'Amato. And he had become a lawyer specializing in tax, nonprofits, and so on. And he very generously helped us to get a nonprofit 501c3 designation. So that happened in November of 1994, and we were officially on the board as the Institute for Native Pacific Education and Culture, which is known for short as INPEACE.
When you look back on the early days, you know, getting started, serving your first cohort of people, and then when you look at what INPEACE does today, how has the organization evolved and grown?
So we have teacher education as one of our goals. Get more residents from the Waianae Coast to become teachers in schools in their own communities. Other area that we looked at was early childhood education, and that is what has particularly expanded, because especially in the mid-1990s, there was even less access to preschool education, especially in rural and small communities, than there is today. So you know the state is still working on this issue. So the key thing there, too, was that we wanted that to be a more grassroots-based effort. Center-based preschools are wonderful, but we wanted something that was more embedded in the community, where not only would we be working with young children and getting them ready for kindergarten, but we would also be helping their parents, grandparents, and other caregivers learn to educate all the children in their families and get them ready for all kinds of institutional experiences. So that was our idea. That's why we had a parent participation model. So ask me about how that got started.
Well, I'm a parent. I know that parents are the first educators. I imagine that had something to do with it. But how did it get started?
Okay, so one of the themes that I'm going to be coming back to again and again is the idea that we do our best work when we listen to community members, help them define what they see as the problems, empower them to take charge of those problems, and give them skills that they may need to do a good job of implementing programs to address those issues. So this was a good example of that. So one day, Cheryl receives a call from a mother who's been referred to her, and this mother is Michelle Mahuka, a young mother of two children who lived on the Nanakuli homestead. She had watched an ad on TV for a parent participation preschool, but the nearest site was in Kapolei. Now, to somebody from the continent, Kapolei and Nanakuli are not that far apart.
Right.
But in cultural terms, they're two very different areas. So Michelle wanted something, not in Kapolei, but in her own community of Nanakuli. She said, I'm going to get all my friends that I went to high school with. We'll all bring our kids. So Michelle became one of the first staff members of Keiki Steps in Nanakuli. And we also, at the same time, opened up a site in Waimanalo.
Are there another one or two accomplishments that your organization was able to achieve that you're especially proud of that you'd like to share or brag about?
So Cheryl, Alice, and I, the founders, are not from the Waianae Coast. We live in town or on the Windward side. And we come from middle-class backgrounds. So Cheryl and Alice are both Native Hawaiian educators, but I'm your Chinese auntie, Russell. Okay? So our idea was not to be the forever leaders of this nonprofit. Our idea was to create a structure that would enable community members to take leadership and ownership over the programs that were developed. And I think that's the biggest accomplishment of INPEACE, is we have a structure now where we're on our fourth CEO. So Cheryl was our first CEO, and our fourth CEO now, Maile Kili'ipio Akoba, is a self-described Maili girl. And our next CEO, Sonoi Marfo, is a self-described Nanakuli person. So we have our top leadership from the Waianae Coast, and actually our whole leadership team and almost all of our program managers are from the communities that they serve, and many of them are former participants in our INPEACE program.
Expanding to neighbor islands is no easy feat. Was that ever part of the plan, or is it something that just kind of evolved along the way?
Okay, so everything kind of evolved along the way, if I want to be honest. When we look back at the timeline, you know, we have that beautiful timeline on our website. Things followed logically upon one another, but we didn't know in advance often what was going to happen. The expansion to the neighbor islands is one of those things. So we start Keiki Steps. It's very successful here on Oahu in involving parents. And then the neighbor islands have an even greater need for early childhood. So here we go. So one thing leads to another. Another good example is just the way the overall program development took place. So we start out with these two pillars of early childhood education and teacher education. And we find out that not everybody wants to be a teacher. Okay, we better expand to areas other than teaching and help people into higher education. And then we add this third bucket now, family economic capacity building. So it all looks like a great plan, doesn't it?
It does.
But I would be lying to you if I said I thought it all out. I had no idea, no idea. So I think another lesson that I take from In Peace, as somebody who comes from town, is the idea that not everybody gets a fair chance in life. Many people don't. And that's one of the things that comes through in your This Is Our Hawaii podcast. A lot of people have gotten the short end of the stick. And those are our local people. And if we want Hawaii to be a better place for everybody, we have to give more people a chance to get ahead and have a good life. And so I don't think that we're miracle workers, but sometimes somebody just needs a hand up. They need that. Every time we have our annual retreat, there's somebody who comes up to me and says words to this effect. Thank you for founding this organization, because now I have the opportunity to help my family financially, to better myself in terms of my education and what I can contribute, and to serve my community. And I never thought I would have a job like that or a chance like that. And all because, you know, we were able to open the door. And that's not something you give people. That's something they earn. But I also think you don't just give somebody a job and then let them figure it out. No, I think there has to be support. And that's one of the things that I think we've been quite good at, mentoring people, giving them educational credentials, and so on. It's just hard when you come from town to sometimes understand that it is a different world out there.
The organization is 30 years in, and there seems like there's still plenty of work to do. What do you hope In Peace can achieve over the next 30 years?
Okay, first I want to give full credit to the staff, because the founders, you know, it's more than a dream come true, because this was far beyond the dreams that we had. One of the goals that we had in our latest strategic plan, which was put together by the staff with board support, the staff was very insistent that we needed to become landowners and have our own property and our own place, our own home base. And you can understand, coming from communities that have been ripped off and disenfranchised, that this is a very strong feeling. So that wasn't on my personal agenda, but as a result of following through on that strong belief from staff, we are in the process of purchasing a building that will become a community hub, we hope, for the economic revitalization of the Waianae Coast. So we're in the process of that, and we would certainly welcome contributions to our capital campaign. So what we hope to do is put everything there except our early childhood efforts, which necessarily are scattered in the communities. So all our teacher education, higher ed counseling, and all our family economic capacity building, our Center for Entrepreneurship, we hope will be in this new community hub.
What exciting times for In Peace and the Waianae Coast and West Oahu. Kathy Au, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks so much, Russell.
That was In Peace co-founder Kathy Au talking with HPR's Russell Subiono. In Peace is currently raising funds to purchase a building out in West Oahu to serve as its community hub. It's also planning a special event in September to mark its 30th anniversary. We'll have a link to more information on the conversation page of our website later today.
Home sellers have traditionally paid a commission that is shared between their agent and the buyer's agent. Traditions, however, change.
They will no longer know if or how much a seller is willing to contribute towards the cost of the buyer's agent representation.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Real Estate Compensation Changes. Next time on Marketplace.
Beginning this evening at 6, following All Things Considered.
Most of us spend a lot of time with other people, from coworkers and family to strangers on the bus.
We don't have as much of an opportunity to consider solitude as a neutral thing or even as a positive experience in our lives.
Renewing our appreciation for time spent alone, this week on Hidden Brain from NPR.
Beginning this evening at 7.
Now it's time for the answer to today's backyard quiz. Earlier, we challenged you to tell us the name of Hawaii's largest lake and where it's located. It's something called an ephemeral lake, which means it doesn't last for a long time. In fact, it only appears during the rainy season. And when it does, it stretches across approximately 850 acres and provides natural wetland habitats for several indigenous bird species. During dry periods, the lake transforms into a dry reddish flat, punctuated by small saline pools. Hawaiian historians are split on where the lake got its name. Some say it was named after an ali'i, while others say it was named after an Oahu trickster god. At this point, you may know the name of this lake is Halali'i, but you may be surprised to know it is located in the south central region of the island of Niihau. Because its water levels are irregular, some do not recognize it as the largest, instead giving the title of largest non-intermittent body of fresh water to nearby Halulu Lake, which is also on Niihau. And congrats to our winner, Mendy Hansen of Hilo, got it right. That's our quiz. If you have an idea for one to share, write to Talk Back at hawaiipublicradio.org. It's been called the Queen of the Sea, and some say it is the most beautiful ship in the world. You can judge for yourself as the historic three-masted vessel has arrived at Honolulu Harbor, and starting this afternoon, it is open to the public. The Amerigo Vespucci is named for the Italian explorer. It is 93 years old, and the Italian Navy is proud of its history. The Conversation's Lillian Song caught up with Captain Giuseppe Alai to talk about this latest world tour.
So right now we are doing a logistic stop here in Honolulu for replenishment in order to be ready for the next stop that will be in Tokyo at the end of August. This is our second global tour, and actually we stopped in Honolulu also on the first global tour of Vespucci in 2002. So it's the second time that Amerigo Vespucci stops in Honolulu, and the stop in Honolulu was already planned in our trip.
It's really a very historical ship as well. It's a beautiful ship. Share some of the history of the Vespucci with me.
Yes, Vespucci is the oldest ship in the Italian Navy. It has been built and launched in 1931, so she is 93. And it was built in Castellammare di Stabia shipyard close to Naples, specifically with the purpose to be a training ship for the midshipmen of the first class of the Naval Academy. So at the end of the first year, they embark on board Vespucci for the very first time in their life in order to have a sea baptism, we say. Besides that, Vespucci is also a floating embassy, is an asset of naval diplomacy for Italy.
She is a very beautiful 93, the three masts, very beautiful visual. Yes. On the ocean. And you were saying that for the naval cadets, it's a baptism by sea as it's one of their first training endeavors. Captain, were you a training cadet on this ship?
Oh, yes, back in 1995, so 29 years ago. And actually, this experience on board of Vespucci is a common experience for all the Italian Navy officers. So the whole of us, we had an experience on board of Vespucci as our very first experience with the sea after the studies in the Naval Academy. And usually we spend here the 3 months of the summertime, so July, August, and September, before coming back to Livorno, where the Naval Academy stays in Italy, close to Pisa and Florence, and continue with the second year and the studies in the Naval Academy.
Just like a lot of Italy itself, your citizenry, your people are able to live with beautiful architecture that are very historic. And I still remember being in Padua and going to the hall where Galileo taught. It really is just so fascinating. And it's like, it gives you chicken skin, goosebumps to know that, you know, you're walking where all these other green people walked. And so for you, this ship has been on the water since 1931. You trained there, and now you are actually commanding the ship. Can you share a personal story about living on the Vespucci?
Yes, I mean, the Vespucci, from my personal perspective, is exactly the third time I had the lucky to be on board of the ship. So as I told you, the first time was as a cadet, and it was the very first time for me spending more than 1 day on board of a ship. In Italy, I'm from Sardinia, from an island, so I had already some experience on a ferry, but just for a few hours. So on Vespucci, I spent my first full week at sea. I was sailing from Livorno to Cadiz in Spain. I still remember that that amazing navigation the first time. It was also for me the very first time I was going to a foreign country. I never left Italy before going to Spain with Vespucci in 1995. So it was an experience of many very first time on board of a ship. Then I was back on Vespucci in 2001 as an instructor for another course of cadets. So I had, again, this experience, but from another perspective, so being part of, not of the training audience, but as a trainer, as an instructor of the cadets. So there was a lot that I was looking forward to transmit them. Then eventually I had this luck. It was also a matter of chance for me to get this job, to be appointed to be the commanding officer of Vespucci. And when the Italian Navy HR they proposed me to get this job, I was enthusiastic, and now I am kind of living a dream, because beside the training of the cadets, there is also the be part of this second world tour to have also this mission to spread the culture and the values and traditions and research of our country, which is really, it's an honor for me to be doing that.
Hmm. So you're spreading that naval diplomacy. And as we have those 4 days of open, free, no reservations needed for the public to come and tour the Queen of the Sea, what would you like to highlight to pay attention to? Because not only are they experiencing a different culture, but this is history as well. What would you like to highlight and tell our listeners to keep an eye out for?
Okay, so as you say, the visits on board of the ship, they are totally for free, and we are really, really looking forward to have people visiting us during our stop in Honolulu. We are going to leave on Monday 29, but till Sunday will be open for visitors. So I would recommend you to look at the details of this ship. This ship is a sailing ship, has a lot about sails. So if there is anybody very fond of that. It's a good chance to have a look to a beginning of the 20th century level vessel. But look all the details. I mean, the beauty of this ship is in the small details, in the small particulars. So I will recommend you to look at that and to look at the stern bridge, which is the one that we usually use for sailing, where there is the most of the history of the ship, but you can also experience there what is the blend between tradition. There is a lot of old instruments there, but also innovation together with the old way of sailing. We teach our cadets with the cutting edge of naval maps, electronic maps, radars. In this spot, you have the perfect blend of that.
Mm. And how many crew members are under you?
So, the crew members, actually, we are roughly 400 people. Of them, I have 115 cadets as a training audience. But in total, we are a little bit less than 400 at the moment. Yeah.
Okay, Captain Lai, you have a very full summer. That's a lot of people under you, and you're stopping off in Honolulu to regroup, to replenish supplies, and then off to Tokyo.
Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Any final things that you want our listeners to know about before I let you go? You've been very generous and gracious with your time.
I wish just to stress the fact that for me, it's the very first time in Honolulu, and is also for a big chunk of my crew. So the ship has already been here, but for the majority of us, it's the very first time. So we are really, really excited to visit Honolulu and away. And thank you very much in advance for the great welcome that you are doing to us, and also for the courtesy of this call. Thanks a lot.
All right. Mahalo nui. 谢谢. Thank you. Obrigado. Hold on. How do you say it in Italian?
Okay. Italian is grazie.
Grazie. Thank you.
Obrigado. It's Portuguese.
Thank you very much.
Aloha. Thank you. Bye-bye. Ciao.
That was Captain Giuseppe Lai talking with Dave Spears' Lillian Song. The Amerigo Vespucci is on a 32-country tour. The public is welcome to visit the ship for free at Pier 9 starting today at 3 p.m. and at various times through Sunday. You do not need reservations. We'll share links on our website after the show.
Ti dico una cosa se non la sai. Per me vale ancora così, ci vuole passione con te, non deve mancare mai, ci vuole mestiere perché lavoro di cuore, lo sai, cantare d'amore non basta mai.
That winds it up for us today. Up tomorrow, we plan to hear from cooler residents who faced the scary threat of a second wildfire just this past week. Got feedback for us? Call our talkback line at 808-792-8217 or email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. Find the Conversation podcast on Spotify, Apple, or Google. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.